So, mom was an English teacher. Dad was a history teacher. Took a degree in history. Got a Master of Liberal Arts from Johns Hopkins. I taught at a private middle school. Taught at a private high school. Wrote curriculum. So my career took the natural trajectory, and I became a Baltimore City street cop. When I got this idea, I called my mom. So that's, you know, what you do. I called my mom. I said, "Mom, so I had to figure out what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a police officer. I already sent my application." And she's like, "Well, that's great. You could do public relations or write text for them, write context." I said, No. I'm going to have a badge, a gun. I'm going to enforce the law in Baltimore City." And she immediately went back into therapy. So I find myself at the academy, and of course, the constant murmur, the question I always hear from the people there is, "So what is he here to write a book? He's doing some sort of sociological research, going to write about the ethics of the police department." And no, I'm going to be a cop, okay? And as I got into the culture there, as we went through classes on law and self-defense, driving, shooting, I found myself finally feeling energized by this culture that was steeped in warriorship on the one hand. How will you confront evil? How will you fight evil? And civic duty and responsibility. How will you take care of these people? And it was energizing. It was amazing. And I loved being in this culture of these dedicated, eccentric people. It was fascinating to me. So within a few months, I'm out on the street. I'm going out on patrol. And I tell you, when you put on a 20-pound belt and you check your weapons and check your hollow point ammunition and your handcuffs, you have crossed the Rubicon. This is real. Okay, you are stepping out there into a life or death situation. And off I went after those months to patrol. So one day I'm sitting there talking to a veteran officer, and we have the cars parked in that way that looks like the police cars are mating, where so that you can talk back and forth to one another. I can say it here, but I just remember how quiet it was. Now, in law enforcement culture, you never say, "Man, it's quiet right now." So that's when the crazy man with the butcher knife comes down the street. So you never say that. So I would say it's uneventful. So I'm talking to this other officer, and we're talking about violence, about a shooting incident that took place, and I just remember how quiet. It was so quiet until that parrot on my shoulder, because you see the microphone for your radio sits up on your shoulder, and the radio itself is on your hip and runs across. So that parrot on my shoulder started going off, "Cutting, cutting, cutting, Druid Hill Avenue, cutting, Sector 3 units." And that was it. You flick those switches and bring that car to life. And no matter how bad that situation is, there's that moment of, "This is me." The adrenaline kicks in. This is why I took this job. There's danger, and I'm running towards it while everyone goes away. And that siren announces who you are and what you're doing. That adrenaline carried me up those streets to Druid Hill Avenue. I rounded the corner. We got out. There's chaos everywhere, and I remember jumping out of the car. And my buddy took the crime scene tape from the trunk of the car, and he wrapped it around the rearview mirror, and he's running, and he's streaming the crime scene tape. And I'm running towards this intersection, and there's this man, this kid, and he's cruciform in the street, and he's trembling just a bit, and someone's screaming, "He's my son, he's my son," and people are yelling, and I'm running towards this kid, and I swear to this day, he cocked his head to the side, and he looked up, and our eyes met, and I watched him take his last breath. And so we're shoving people aside, and I'm talking to the medics, and I help them load him in. And I remember right there was no blood in that street. There was no blood in the scene. You see, his sister had gotten into a fight with another woman, and they were pushing and shoving, and he got between the two of them, and he slapped this girl in the face, and the girl responded by taking a shiv, a homemade knife, and just plunging it right into his heart. But there was no blood. So I went down to university, and I got up to shock trauma. And when I walked into shock trauma, they're used to seeing police officers in there. I'm walking in, and all the residents, I guess they are crowded around this guy on the table, and they have cracked his chest, and now the punch bowl has spilled. And I'm standing there, and I'm watching this lake form around my combat boots. And I realized I'd joined a fraternity. All these passages from Ernest Hemingway and from Joseph Conrad about war and death and violence. I've joined this fraternity of men who go there. And the resident said, oh, look, officer, look how his heart's sheared off on the bottom. And look at this. And so what I had to do next was take his clothes back to headquarters and document them for the case. And I picked them up and remember thinking, God, they're heavy. His clothes were so heavy because, of course, they were saturated in the blood that hadn't been there before. So I took them in my patrol car back, and I'm sitting there later, and I'm writing out our form. I'm going through each piece, taking it out, and his Zodiac medallion, I've got that, and I'm putting it down, and I'm changing my gloves again because they're so stained with blood and trying not to get it on the form, and here's his wallet and his cell phone and his shirt. And I'm looking at his possessions and thinking, this guy picked these up this morning and put them in his pockets. These are his personal possessions, and I'm touching his personal possessions. And of course, I've got his most personal possession all over me. But I'm going through procedures, and I'm running on adrenaline, and we're taking care of business. And the haunting started that night. When the adrenaline wore down, there were no more procedures, and I was in my bed, and I'm finally trying to fall asleep. And every time I start to nod out, he's staring at me again. And I wake up, and I process it. Oh, that's right. That's what he looked like. And I start to fall asleep, and he's staring at me again. And I keep seeing his face, and he's staring at me. And that was the first part. But then he continued with me. The face goes away after a while. And there are other faces that come after that. There have been so many, with gunshot wounds and hit by cars. And there have been so many over those years. But the haunting continues because I realize if I remember his name and everything about him and I become invested in him as a human, completely take him into me, then how can I carry on to the next one and the next one and the next one? But if I forget him, if I throw him away and I become too hardened, then I've lost something of myself. If he's too close, I've lost something of myself. If I let him go, I've lost something. So I have to live in this yin-yang tension of being able to carry out that stewardship and not forget that life is fragile and flawed and beautiful and damaged, and especially my own. Thank you.